Hello, it's me. Welcome to another episode of Adventures in Creative Industries. My name is Eric Ravaglia, your one-man band, and today I am with Thomas Paines, aka Thomas Paine. Thomas is a local signwriter celebrity who painted a number of iconic signs, one of which is Bros Bagels. And we had Mama Bros in one of the past episodes. If you're interested in how to launch a business, you should definitely go listen to that podcast. We really vibe. We really find ourselves in the same position in life. The best thing about this podcast is that we experience the life of a tradesman. This like odd mixture of being a painter and painting signs and also being a tradesman and having the issues that tradesmen have. Thomas and I have a really frank conversation about money. We really dissect our fees and why we charge what we charge, what's fair to charge. We also talk about how the industry works as a whole, how charging the right amount of money is essential and has a huge impact on your life and well-being. If you're out there and you're having troubles trying to understand how much you should charge and why, there is a very beneficial segment in the podcast and we couldn't be more honest, no bullshit approach. Have a listen. I think you'll find it very interesting. I've also asked Thomas, what do you need to do if you want to become a signwriter? And here is a condensed tidbit from the interview. Cue clip.
Go on a signwriting course, learn the basics, and then set yourself a task and think of the end result and try and get to the end result and plan how to get there. So for me, I got 40 panels cut. A border time, I learned through trial and error and through online searching and YouTube and everything.
And we're back. What do you think? Do you like the tidbit at the beginning? I mean, a lot of podcasts do it. I don't know. I feel like I want to keep the intro always very like sharp and short, maybe a minute or something like that. But I thought, you know, let's do it. This is for people that want to hear a complete different experience in the creative industries. This is for people that are interested in becoming sign writers, sign painters. We also touch on the difference between these two. And also, it's for people that want to embrace typography and type and learn a craft. I hope you enjoy this one as much as I enjoy making it. And here we go.
Can you tell people the difference between sign writing and sign painting? So I didn't even know there was a difference.
So full honesty is that I really am a sign painter. Mm. But it sounds better for me on my business cards, on all my PR stuff, on my social media to write sign writing than I'm a sign writer. Mm-hmm. And it's a more widely understood profession. Okay. But you have the main difference between sign writing and sign painting is that sign writing is when someone can approach a blank canvas with a pencil, a brush and paint and choose a style from the top of their head and just write something on that wall with a degree of looseness and hand painted qualities to it. Perhaps all the brush strokes aren't straight or the flourishes all end slightly differently. And a sign writer can do that, and that is sign writing. Whereas the difference to sign painting is a sign painter is perhaps a more traditional process where they would measure the space, they would consider the proportions of the lettering, they might draft them digitally or manually, and then they would go through a process of approval with the client, and then they would paint those letters onto that surface. So I employ that process, the process of a sign painter. Someone would ask me to paint a mural in their office wall and I would measure it and look at some references and design it and look at colours and show them a mock-up, a digital. And then they would approve it and then I would paint it.
Yeah.
Whereas I suppose the closest thing to that in the mural world is to sign writing in the mural world is actually like graffiti. Mm-hmm. So a graffiti artist would just say, perhaps it happens, you know, people get graffiti artists to come and do stuff on their office walls and they would just say like, oh, just do something. And they would
that's like what some of these wall doodling thing that is quite popular at the moment.
Yeah, yeah. It's so illustrative. It's like not my type of thing. I mean, like I'm not an illustrator and I'm not an artist. I don't think I would class myself as that. I'm a designer. or a painter,
and then painter.
Yeah. So it's a really funny thing, right? Because people ask me what I do all the time from all walk of life, and like when you say to like so the Long Nidri Dads meetup, for example.
Yeah.
You've got like guys in finance world, a couple of guys in medical world and things, mm-hmm. and one of the guys a G surgeon. But you just when I opened, when they asked me what I did when I first met them, I almost take a breath, right? But I just go, I'm a painter.
Which
I say a lot because I say that to people a lot because I don't necessarily, apologies if I have said this to you, but I don't want to engage in that full conversation sometimes.
Yeah, because you have to drop the knowledge.
Yeah. You've got to like, some people just don't want to hear it.
Yeah,
and look, I'm wearing them now. I wear my clothes are covered in paint because I just wipe my hands on when I'm painting, when I'm working.
Of course. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So when I don't want to engage in that conversation with someone, for whatever reason, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, not necessarily being rude. But I'll just be like, I'm a painter. I paint signs and murals.
All right, there you go. Boom.
Or I'll just say, sometimes just be like, oh, what do you do for your job? It's like, oh, but I'm a painter. And if I'm talking to someone that, and in a different environment, like a cafe opening or something, mm-hmm. I'll just be like, oh, yeah, I'm a sign writer. And they'll go, oh, that's really interesting.
Right.
So I change my mind.
You change it, you go back and forth.
All the time.
It's interesting how that difference is even there, because if you think about it, you do come out with the idea. You just don't come out with the idea straight on the wall with your paintbrush.
No.
You do it on a different format, either, you know, drawing or computer.
I can do that. I mean, like, it's just not very good. You know, like, to my high standards,
I think.
You know, you could give me a blank wall and I could paint your name on it, no problem. And you could tell me, can you paint that in script? And I could do it. But would it be good? No. Not in my eye. It wouldn't be
as precise.
It would
as
be
your job required to be.
Absolutely. Yeah. So I just feel like I learned a process of how to paint signs, and I've just followed that process every time. You know, so it's like I did a talk recently where I skimmed back through some old photos of my work, and I was like, for this very first sign, I measured the board, I prepped the board. I designed it on a computer and I transferred a printout onto that board, and then I painted the letters with brush and paint. And that's exactly what I do now every day, but I'm just better at it.
You get better every day, I guess. Well, it'll come like 10 years down the line. It'll come the time where you're like, I can just do it.
Yeah. And I think now we get, you know, I say we because I work quite closely with different sign writers. And when I'm working together with someone else, I call upon their ability to sign write, and I would delegate that work.
Because you'll say, look, I need, this is the type of typeface we need on that wall, we need this sentence.
Yeah. Yeah, whereas we did a job down at Lock Fine, and it's like I work with another sign writer called Tatch. And
shout out to Tatch.
Tom Hatch. That's
Thomas Paine and Tom Hatch.
Yeah, two Thomases. Yeah.
What? Like that's like a badass like combination of names, especially because I know you're not a video gamer, but like you share the surname of one of the most iconic video game characters, which is Max Payne.
Yeah, I do. Yeah.
Yeah. Did you know about Max Payne?
I'm not a gamer, but I know who Max Payne is.
Well, it's also very Scottish, right?
Yeah.
Was that done here in?
My dad's Scottish, so that's probably where the name surname.
You say okay, I think the surname is very Scottish. The name is not Scottish. See, the game is not Scottish. I don't think it's name. I think they're down in the US somewhere. I could be talking shit. I don't remember right now. Sorry, I'm double checking. But so please continue. I've interrupted you.
Well, I was saying that we get jobs now. We were down at Lock Fine, and we'd already prepared some of the lettering, transferred it onto the wall, and it was Tatch's job. I was helping him, and I was just like, I'll do that. Because I'm better at that. Whereas he's like, the client says, can you just write private on this board? You know, and he's much better at that.
He goes like, well, cool.
Yeah.
You would freak out. He's like, can you write this on the
board? I could do it. I would just take ages. So like, I would take twice as long.
Yeah.
He knows it.
Yeah.
I know. I mean, like, I know it. I'd just be like, I can do that. It just take me an hour. Whereas it'd take you 20 minutes.
Well, that's fair enough, because you will have to be a lot more like thinking about every single stroke to make sure that it's straight enough and it looks good enough. And
well, there's a thing in sign writing which isn't healthy, which is perfection. It's not meant to be perfect. And it's not healthy, actually, because clients can sometimes be the pressure put onto the painter, the sign writer, to make it perfect, when actually lines... painted lines should be straight, but not perfect. And there's a difference.
Yes.
And if you didn't want something to have those hand-done, hand-painted elements, that quality to it, then...
Just get it printed.
Yeah, you would use a different process.
Get decal.
Can't it be cheaper?
Yeah.
And I tell people that all the time. It's like, I can do that for you. I got a call, actually, from someone who wanted some stuff before Christmas, and I had some time. And I said, I can do that for you, but from the conversation we've had, it sounds like a couple of days' work. So that's going to be £700. Yeah. It might not be £700. It might be £700 that you forgot to spend, but if you think about it, you may want to look at other options. Mm. I'm not saying you need to go down a super cheap option and just get, you can still convey quality with spending less money. Yeah. I mean, I don't tell people that a lot, but because otherwise I wouldn't have any work.
You'd be broke in a month.
That's right. But I suppose it's honesty. You just need to be honest with people.
I couldn't agree more. I mean, like, many times a client saying they want X, and I either can provide X, or I need to find someone that can provide X, or you don't need X. You know, you can do with Y. It'll cost less. You don't need animated. Speak to so and so.
Absolutely.
Done.
Yeah.
It's like, ugh, just
the way and it pass. Is. I mean, I don't do blackboards anymore, chalkboards.
Mm. I heard that you guys not very keen on doing blackboards. What's
well, we used to do a lot of A boards, and but I mean, Edinburgh Council have banned the use of A boards. Yeah, in the county. So
do you know what? I don't think they would have banned it if they were like crafted, like the stuff you do.
Mm.
But the crappy ones that you get painted with this big thing on the floor, it's like they're horrible. They're horrible.
Well, there's a thing about, you know, it's tricky, isn't it? Because a council can't dictate what type of signage that someone should have,
because advertising, though.
Yeah, I mean, it is. You're allowed to advertise your own business, so you're allowed to paint onto your shop front without getting
planned. Of course.
So, yeah, because you're allowed to advertise your own business.
Well, it's your own.
But you need business, to be careful how what you actually what choices you make, because otherwise they'll come along and ask you to change it. Like the shop that painted it.
Really?
Yeah. Because there's a shop in Stockbridge that painted its shop front like a fruit salad. You know, like it was pink on the bottom and. who live next to it,
they complained.
Like, they complained. They changed it. So it's one of those things. It's like it's something I talk about too much when I go and meet a new client. But you have to consider it. Otherwise, you're just wasting your money.
That's hilarious. But it kind of makes sense. If regarding A boards, the council just, you know, they own the pavement.
So, yeah, right.
And you need to give enough space for people to walk.
It's just like they should have just done a ban in certain areas. That's all it should have been.
Some areas were bad. I mean, bits of Leith Walk are ridiculous.
It should have just been regarding, you know, high, you know, pedestrianized areas.
Yeah,
gone,
I agree.
Gone straight away.
Or like smaller then, pavements.
Yeah,
it's like
payments
than 2 meters.
Exactly,
you know,
exactly.
Stuff like that.
You got it exactly.
Since they redone Leith Walk and it's all larger, it doesn't really matter. It's on the side. It doesn't look great. It doesn't matter. It's on the side.
Yeah.
But do you know, that's interesting to hear, but it makes sense. It probably is an unwritten rule. Just don't make it look bad.
Yeah.
don't have a salad on the wall.
Yeah.
But like, make it look elegant. I don't think anybody would.
Well, the council guidelines basically say that it needs to be in keeping with the area. So
makes sense.
Yeah. I mean, it totally does. I mean, as I said, we don't do a lot of chalkboards anymore. I'm too expensive. You know, and I don't. I wouldn't. If I were to compare myself to other freelance designers, photographers, perhaps, or people in other creative industries, I'm not expensive, relatively, in terms of day rates.
Your day rate is $350, which is kind of the standard day rate these days in advertising.
But often it's cheaper. And actually, I tell people a lot, regarding cost. You know, you say you come to me and you've got a new cafe and you've had the shop front painted and you know what type of lettering you want on the front. You've got a reference or two. Actually, here's an exact example. One on Easter Road at the moment. It used to be a Bookies, right?
Yeah.
And the client's like, oh, I just want some really nice simple block letter. But can, you know, I want that to be the logo as well. So is there any way in which, you know, we could have that design and then use it as the logo for business cards and whatever, the top of the menu, et cetera. So basically, to explore that from a design point of view, it will cost a client, if it's an hour, it'll cost them 40 quid for me and £80. So to get a logo for that cafe is going to cost them £80.
Which is nothing.
Yeah. So they design, so I'm going to design what I'm going to paint.
Right. But also, but like,
they get it.
Approach,
they get
right?
a vector.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But that's, all right. So it's also different approaches. A logo alone is nothing. But like if for a coffee shop that needs just the logo, then it's great. Yeah. But like if you need the logo, you need the logo type. You need all the types.
Because it stops once I've done once I've designed the thing that I'm going to paint for them.
Yeah,
it stops unless more's required.
Yeah, but you don't. You also like you will do some research, I guess, to make that logo. But it's not like you will do like a market research, see what other competitors are doing, see what works.
I don't
want to
downplay the.
Yeah, you just go
a
off
branding
and do
agency.
It. No, do you know what I mean?
I'm not.
But like not for certain businesses, amazing. Yeah. It's like for that place.
And totally sufficient for their needs.
For a coffee shop, you don't need, you need a website, a simple page.
And I'm not
a menu,
totally.
You don't need that.
Totally, if it's a cafe or a restaurant, it's like, if you're talking websites, just put the menu.
Yeah, put a landing page, the menu, seriously.
And the opening times. Yeah,
yeah, nobody cares about your website.
Yeah, totally.
It's interesting. It makes sense, though. Again, why not?
Well, I offer that a lot, and like I'm quite happy to say to people that, you know, I've got the artwork.
You could charge
it's
more.
Yours.
You could say,
but then it's the whole job to me, right?
It'll cost you £200.
Yeah, it's the whole
logo,
job to me. It's gonna, you know, like it would take me 2 hours to design something. It would cost them £80, but it would take me a day to paint it.
Yeah,
so now
course,
we're talking, you know, with the materials, we're talking £450 for a day and 2 hours. So that's good money.
That's good money. That's freelance money, right?
Yeah,
there.
Totally. That's how it works. So that's how it's, and it's like, I get the question all the time is like, how do you price things? And it's exactly the same as a tradesman. If a joiner comes into your home and he says, the front door is going to cost you £80 and all the sundries are going to cost you £30 and it's going to cost you 2 hours of me equals
X. Do you know, that's the honest trader. Not all traders are like that. Mm. A lot of traders come in and says it costs X. And what? And they can't even itemize their bloody invoices. Yeah. I mean, like I have really a bone to pick with tradesmen.
Yeah.
I don't hate them.
Yeah.
But they're really bad at business.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
Because they don't care.
Yeah.
They get so much.
They get so much. Yeah, it's frustrating. I return all my calls. Do you return your calls?
All of them.
Yeah, me too.
You send me an email, even if I'm busy, I'll either ask any of my other colleagues or I'll just tell you I'm busy.
Yeah.
I never leave a call unanswered or an email unanswered. It's unprofessional. I'll be out of business.
Unless there's someone listening who disagrees with you.
Really? Is that it?
Well.
What do you mean?
Well, as in like they've sent you an email and you haven't responded.
Oh, if I haven't responded to an email. You know what? Like I noticed that it happens sometimes. You get the email. You read it quickly and I get back to it.
Yeah, yeah.
And then your daughter puke on you.
Yeah.
And that's like a disruptive thing you don't think about.
You've got to deal with the puke before you reply to it.
And then it's gone.
Yeah.
It's gone. Yeah. And it happens to me like sometimes like a week later. I'm like, fuck, yeah. I forgot to answer that email.
I apologize to people who I don't get back to via direct message.
Right.
Or Twitter. Because it's not my system.
Yeah, yeah.
I have to have a system.
Send me an email, please.
My system is email comes in, I read the email, I mark the email, it's favorited, it's at the top.
Yeah.
And then I get to it.
I leave it, when if it's important, I leave it unread.
Yeah.
Because I cannot deal with the little numbers on top of the email, so I have to answer them.
Well, I have to, it's read, but it's favorited, so therefore it's, and then in my Gmail, it's all my favorites right at the top.
Right, I'll see how you got it like that,
So when it's emailed, so when a response has been given, it's unfavorited.
Yeah.
And then it comes, when it comes back, same system. And I have to have that system, otherwise I lose it.
Yeah.
I lose track of stuff.
Whilst, if you're a tradesman, you don't give a fuck.
No, you don't give a fuck. Because they get so many inquiries.
Yeah.
So many.
So many. But like, if you are, okay. God, I have such hate. Right? There are companies out there that are doing exactly that. They're good. They answer to their emails. And one is called IBAN. They're not necessarily perfect in their job, but yeah, one of the best. And they have so much work. Yeah. It's like, I wanted to book them to do my first flat.
Right.
And no chance. Like, I had to wait like 4 months.
Do you know what was interesting? Today, this conversation came up about trying to find trades. And I was at a cafe I was at, and the owner said to me that she's just spoken to a friend, and they said, we should have a little black book because I know a really good tiler. Your tiler let you down. Mm-hmm. I know a really good one. And she's like, I know a great joiner. He could be
in the book. That's the way to do it.
Yeah.
You need mates. Like, my tiler did such a bad job. Such a bad job. And I'm still bitter. I go into the bathroom and I'm like, I didn't come to the... Like, my house was literally thrown upside down, right?
Yeah, yeah.
One day I don't go on to check.
Yeah.
The tiler finishes the job. My wife goes because I was in a meeting with a client. And he sort of like did this old smoke and mirrors with her, like started cleaning the floor, cleaning the walls. It was hard to see it. And then we went back and checked it properly. And it was outrageously bad.
Yeah.
Really badly done. Like, no attention to details whatsoever. I mean, like, they're big 60 by 60 tiles, 600 by 60. They're massive.
Yeah.
They're not aligned.
Yeah. That's...
How can you misalign four tiles on the walls?
Yeah, that's bullshit.
That is bullshit. You know, I'm so angry about that.
Being an East Lothian resident... the best thing is East Lothian Trusted Trader. It's a council online. It's the council website.
Yeah, Edinburgh's got there too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I'm not sure whether the Edinburgh one's the same, that you have to actually fill in a handwritten form.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
So I'll have a look at the
So if you want to put a review in for someone in East Lothian, right, you've got to handwrite a form and post it to the council, and then they scan it in and then they put it on the online. So you can't.
The processes of East Lothian.
Do you know what? I really like it though.
Yeah,
because it filters all the shit. You know, all the YouTube comment trolls will go away because they're not like, you can't just flippantly leave a bad review for someone unless they've actually done something.
Yeah. Something bad.
Do
you know, it's also like, the guy who painted that house is like, it's my neighbor, son-in-law. So he did an amazing job, fair price. I was so happy. One of the best tradesmen I've ever dealt with.
Yeah.
And I showed him a contract before the job. He got angry. He said, he signed that. I never signed a contract.
Yeah.
I'm like, what? I sign a contract every day. Like, I have contracts with my clients all the time. What do you mean you never signed a contract? It just says you're going to do the job by day X. It's going to cost Y unless something happens.
Yeah.
That's it.
So you, as a homeowner, are asking people to sign contracts. That is a bit, that's odd.
Is it?
Yeah.
But like, I was...
maybe that's odd.
But it's odd, okay. Is it? But like, as a freelancer, right? Signing a contract
I just think it's a different world.
So, fair enough. But the contract is just stating that you're going to do your job.
Understand.
Why would you be afraid to sign it?
Totally. Understand that. But the thing is that payment's withheld until the job is complete. Or satisfactory to a satisfactory level. So that's how that guy would work every day.
Yeah.
So he just says like, I've got to be so decorators is a funny one because decorators tend to like roam around the city and just do loads of jobs at once.
Yeah.
You know, they've got like a ring of keys and they're just like access to everyone's house. It's like they tend to be like, right, I'm going to go put a coat of primer on that door and then I'm going to drive here and I'm going to drop off him and he's going to go and put, you know, and I'm going to drive here and then I'll drop off her and she's going to do that, you know, and like, and they've got, it's like this, a system which kind of can work in your favor. If you're patient.
Oh yeah.
You've got to be patient.
Yeah. Yeah.
Cause it's like, but it makes sense totally. If you're like boring technical paint stuff, if you're like an oil-based painter, it makes total sense because oil-based paint takes a while to dry. So
in
Edinburgh forever, conditions, it's cold. And this time of year, but
so for you, like, you paint a sign and then you've got to wait.
Well, certain things, absolutely, you've got to wait. So glass gilding, I've just done a big window. It was five visits, you know, and it's like, I'm lucky that I had other things,
yeah,
to sort of like, you know, fill out that time. I've got an analogy which I definitely stole from someone, which is rocks, pebbles and sand. So mm-hmm. the way I manage my workflow is I have to have, every month I have to at least have one rock or two rocks, which are big jobs.
Yeah.
And then you have pebbles, which are smaller jobs. A pebble is a shop front, a window, mm-hmm. And then sand, that's small things. Toilet signs, commissions, you know, mm-hmm. stuff I can do in the workshop. And if I don't have my balance, it doesn't fill my work void. So if I don't have rocks, pebbles and sand, I don't, I have an unequal void.
So good.
Yeah.
So it works for your trade so well.
Totally. So I, this month, have a good balance.
You got your rocks, you got your pebbles, that you got
January,
your sand.
It's all pebbles and sand. Mm-hmm. Because people are back to work. And this year, I might have a rock, which will be really good. Mm. So, but you've got to balance it. I mean, like, you have to be able to say, I can't do that job today because the client's going to pay me slowly. I need to go and do this job, which is for a residential client, when they're going to either pay me cash or they're going to pay straight away.
Cash flow is a huge, huge deal on any trade. For me, it's the same. I need to do the jobs I know they pay straight away. And some clients that are bad at paying are really, really like hard to deal with.
You know what's really interesting about the contract thing is that some of the clients, I've done some work for big clients. Mm-hmm. Historic Scotland.
Yeah.
No contract.
Well, like the same. I the contract thing for me is more emails. You know, I'll say what I'll do, how I'll do it. Yeah. If I write you a quote, on my quote is the terms and conditions at the bottom.
Yeah.
So like that for me is as good as a contract.
Yeah.
Everything is there.
Yeah.
And for certain jobs, like bigger jobs, there is an NDA to sign and there is a contract. There is no way out of that, you know. But for your trade, it's probably different.
Do you think it's something to do with the fact that what you provide to clients isn't necessarily tangible?
I think so. I think the client are trying to protect from the fact that there are a lot of freelancers that are shit as freelancers, you know? Like even though I have a track record, if I'm working with a big client, they have processes in place. You can't escape the process. Yeah. You can smooth it out if you have a conversation with them, which I do all the time. And sometimes when a client drop on me a 26-page contract for a pebble job, I'm like, I don't have time. If you want me to go through a 26-page contract, I'll have to charge you my time because that takes half a day just to read it, interpret it, and give you my rights.
Yeah.
So it's my veteran back, and I need to go back. If it's ridiculous, it's ridiculous. You don't need a 26-page contract. But there are levels on which you can do a job without a contract. Mm. With some people, some agencies never had a contract. They call me and say, can you do this? No bother. So it really depends.
I know sign writers who have threatened to go back and scratch work off glass because it's not...
They didn't get paid.
Because they've not been paid.
Well, if you had a contract, you can just...
Well, I also know a sign writer whose dad's a solicitor and is like...
Easy.
Yeah. So all her work is contracted and deposited, and it's a great place to be. But mm-hmm. sometimes you need to move quicker than that process dictates, right?
I agree with you, man. Like, so if they don't pay you, what are you gonna do? You can use the paper, the contract, to scratch the stuff off the window. Because by the time you get to a solicitor, you have to pay it. It's ridiculous. Yeah. It's more just like for certain jobs, it's part of the process. And when you accept the job, you understand the process that you accept. You have to sign a certain amount
of
stuff.
Absolutely.
But I always invite people, read your NDAs, because some of the NDAs, they make you sign out your right from the get-go. That means that every job you do with that company going forward, you lose every right of you on your work. Mm. So like if you make a character, for instance, and that character doesn't get used, but you made it for that job, it's theirs. So like you need to be careful what you sign.
So I've experienced in a little bit of that world just because I did some graphic design freelance.
I like
stuff.
How you say a little bit, like you worked in the business for a while.
8-10 years.
Yeah, because you were done. You started at White Space as an intern.
Yeah.
Then you went off and did the ECA.
Yeah, you've been on my LinkedIn.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
You did that ECA.
I did furniture and product design at university, BA honors. I got I got a scholarship for a master's.
Mm-hmm.
I did a product design master's, and then I had a year of an artist in residency.
The artist in residency.
So you have you basically do a year, 12 months actually, where you have one day a week and you teach something mm-hmm. to students.
Yeah.
In my case, I was in the workshops. I was teaching them basics. I was like setting them a task, being today we're going to, do a series of joints and we're going to learn how to join something. And then in return for that, you get like a small material budget and like access to a studio and a desk for a year. So it's really
That's pretty good.
So during that year, I did a few internships.
Cool.
And I worked in a bar. And then I did white space and I was like, I did it. And I at that stage, I was not a graphic designer or a digital designer mm-hmm. at all. I could only really design things in three dimensions. So I tried to get into a a job where I could do that, or an internship where I could do that. But
product design is hard.
Absolutely. And for whatever reason, I just couldn't find something that I wanted to stay in Edinburgh as well. So I just couldn't find something that was suitable. So I just thought, I'd done my own sort of bad graphic design, designed logos, business cards for my own degree shows and things, and had a basic understanding of software that at the time I thought was excellent, but of course it wasn't excellent. It was just...
It's like curve, like when you feel like you know everything. And
I tell people all the time, I tell students, and now I'm at a stage where I go into back into ECA and I teach Illustrator, right?
Do you know?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. So I teach Illustrator.
But that's a big rock to have,
graphic,
right?
Yeah. I mean, like, that. It's just like, I'm a contracted tutor. So I go in and I sort of teach them how to artwork a logo and things like that.
Mm.
And I sort of told them last time I was in, I was like, whatever you do, don't put on your CV that you're an expert in Illustrator or Photoshop just because you've done it 10 times.
Mm.
You know, like I've worked with people who've been an art worker, in a print-based design agency for 30 years, and they wouldn't call themselves an expert.
No, but these people are fascinating. Because when I used to work at a lead agency, they had workshopping people in the same floor. So I'll go there and sit down and have a look at what they were doing. And the way they could explain to you how the software works was like, wow, I know nothing. This is good.
Yeah, totally.
Do you know, because they were like, if you do this and there, and then a little bit of this, a little bit of that, it's like,
this is how I do it.
Yeah, that's same. So this is how I'm like, Illustrator.
There's going to be another way.
For sure.
But I'm just like, this is how I would do it.
Do you know, like Photoshop? Photoshop is impossible to master because Photoshop is 7 different programs at once.
Mm-hmm.
So it, the people that use Photoshop for artworking is completely different from the people that use Photoshop for animation.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
But the people that use Photoshop for artworking can do stuff with that software.
Yeah, and it's like I've been asked to teach InDesign, but how do I really know how to use it? Not really.
I can do your book, no problem. Yeah, but that doesn't mean I know how to use InDesign.
Likewise, it means I know how to open and set up a document to the right dimensions. And
that's it.
I understand the difference in the export settings. Yeah. Just.
The bleeding and all that.
Yeah, I know what those things are. Yeah, definitely.
But that doesn't mean I know the software.
No, absolutely. So. There's like this thing about students that I was definitely one of them, 100%. And that's, don't put on your CV that you're an expert in software, Creative Cloud software, because you're not. Just say that you've got experience in it.
Yeah.
Because that's all that's going to be asked of you.
Yeah, they rarely say, sometimes they do without. That's when it's scary. When you read a job application, ask for an expert, and you're like, 2 years, not like, so they ask for like 2 years experience at least, an expert in Adobe Cloud. And I'm like, maybe you don't understand that Creative Cloud is like 17 different software, different things.
Yeah.
But I think what they need is actually what you said, someone that is versed, that knows what they're doing.
Just say, I am proficient in.
And that'll do you.
Yeah.
I mean, these days, time and age, like, it's funny, I was talking to people like have actual jobs. And you're basically wearing 7 hats.
People that have actual jobs.
Yeah. You're wearing 7 hats. You know, you're doing a little bit of video editing, you're doing a little bit of designing, someone is doing a little bit of animation. And clearly, it's just normal now to ask you to do different things.
Yeah.
And if you're a creative and you don't know how to edit a video, you're in trouble.
Mm. That is interesting. But it can be, it's kind of unfair. I mean, I now have realised what I'm best at, and I have lucked into a job. I am.
You know, you that's not true, though.
Well, I don't know.
Wait a second. Thomas Paine. Mr. Paine. Let's talk about this, because 10 years in the industry doing graphic design, you get to a point that you became design director at some point, did you know?
I was head of design. I was an SEO agency. So if you're like a designer...
An SEO agency, you're a head of design at the SEO agency.
Yeah, that's got to be a caveat.
That's hilarious.
Yeah, it's got to be. So So if I wanted to play out my CV, I would say that I was head of design in my last role before I became a sign painter.
Yes.
Yeah, and you'd be like, oh, right, cool.
But then you look into an SEO agency.
Yeah, so then you're like, oh, it's an SEO agency, so it doesn't really count.
But then, you know, after 10 years, you definitely know how to design, you definitely know how to have ideas. How to execute ideas.
So going back to that point about doing a logo for someone for £80, it's like... it's taken me a long time to be able to be able to
that's
work
you should charge
that efficiently.
More. You should have like a price list.
I just feel like
£200 for a
I know program. I know how much I need to make a day, a week, a month.
I know, but
I know
you also need
targets.
To value your work. Otherwise, you take
the
whole industry down.
Absolutely, but I think that the value for someone approaching me is in the end painted product.
Bullshit. Because if you're doing logo design and you have 10 years of design behind your back, you know, it's that thing that you charge for your experience. You can get another guy and pay him £80. They don't have your experience. They can copy somebody else's design and that's the job done. Well, you wouldn't do that. You would sit down and think about the design and make it.
I think that you're right. You're probably right. But I just feel like I have a system which works like when I'm artworking or designing, I charge £40 an hour no matter what I'm doing. And when I'm painting, I charge £50 an hour. And that's just how I work it out.
You're breaking my heart, because that's not how it works, right? Like then someone that can do 3D is not the same as someone that can art direct 3D. Like if you do an illustrations, for instance, 3D illustrations, we were talking about Bill Ellis. But he's an example I bring up a lot of time because he's amazing at what he does. And he's an art director. If you talk to him, he's an art director, illustrator. And his idea, the use of the tools and the time it takes is completely different from, you know, the time, the idea of coming up with something out of, he's doing it for that, he's been doing it for, as well, he's doing it for 10, 15 years, so you know what he's doing. And like, he can sit down and come up with something amazing in very short amount of time, but that doesn't mean it's not valuable. The value is on your experience.
I understand.
Who you are.
Absolutely.
So stop. It sounds to me that you kind of have
a
scare to it.
No, I'm not necessarily, but I suppose it's like a different... name some of his clients, for example. Name some of Bill Ellis's clients.
I can't name it officially because I don't know what Sandy was.
Right,
not.
So
will
yeah,
kill
fine,
me if
fine.
I do.
So, right.
They're massive. Like, the
big,
thing I can say...
Boys.
Dan,
that's
Dan,
your point, right?
Yeah.
That's my point. It's big clients, right?
Right.
So I'm a jobbing tradesman, a sign writer. So I work for people with all sorts of budgets and money.
Of course.
And really, when I'm talking about that, I spend 2 hours on some design work and you can have it as a logo, that's a really good sales point for me. And actually, a really good sales point for me, because it may not always take me 2 hours. Sometimes it'll take me a little bit more. That's just the way that it works out. You know, sometimes I'll spend a whole day designing a mural for someone.
Do you charge them?
And I'll charge them for it.
All right, cool.
So it's like, it's not, you know, I, unlike some of my friends who are painters, I don't see myself as someone who undercharges for design work. And I always charge for preparation and artworking. Because for every job, there is a stage where you sit down and you're starting that work, whether you're on site or not. Right? So I'm sitting there and I'm going like, right, I'm going to gild this window, and it's going to take. All right, so I'm going to get all that printed off, and I'm going to get that. I'm going to prepare that. I'm going to prepare the paint. Mm. You know, I'm going to get the gold material ordered.
Yeah.
And if I didn't account for that time and charge it back to a client, then I wouldn't make enough money, I think, actually.
Of course. So do you charge for that time?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. But I mean, I don't charge for unpacking and packing my van, but.
Which you should. Well, that takes 5 minutes.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you can't charge. But there has to be an understanding that a sign writer, actually, that I was chatting to a friend of mine about this recently, and And it was a nice job where we just went to the job and we'd packed all our kit with limited preparation. And we'd sort of, you know, it's quite like the world of someone that does chalkboards or the world of someone, you know, someone's like a joiner. They can just, you know, if you've got some stuff that you need done at your house, the joiner can come along and he might even have the material in his van. Sometimes he will. Sometimes we'll have to go and pick stuff up on the way. But a joiner will drive to your house, pick up material and just do the job. And all the tools are in the van and they get back in the van once the job is done and you're happy with it, once they've signed the contract. And then and then they go. And that isn't the world of a signwriter, because there's much more involved in the process.
That's what I mean. But do you charge? You charge for that?
I charge
process.
For it. Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah.
But that's different. But like, I'm just saying that you have your point is sound, absolutely sound. But like, you could add to the services if you wanted to.
Yeah.
So I could sign write it, and I could also do design.
Yeah.
These are the logo that I designed. And this service is not going to be expensive.
Totally.
But you could say, you know, for sign writing I charge $40 an hour, but for design your logo, I charge $50 an hour, $60 an hour.
Yeah,
and that's it. You keep it fair, but then you're valuing your own experience into doing what you're doing.
Uh-huh.
But like, I wouldn't take the piss. I'm not talking about like charging like a grand or something.
Totally.
It's just more having a different price book, because like,
do you think chatting to your friends in the creative industries, is that not one of the biggest things that people worry about or take the longest to learn? Is pricing work?
Nobody
talks about it.
Nobody talks about money.
Nobody doesn't
talk
about
money. We can't fix it. I charge $350 a day. I have no problem saying that.
Yeah, me too.
And that's the industry standard for a middle to senior role. But like, if you charge $400 or $450 a day, you're pricing yourself out of the market. The thing I have a problem with is like, it has been $350 since I started. So like, I used to charge $250 first, and then $300 growing up, and then $350. But $350 was the standard 10 years ago. So that's a problem, because, you know, in 10 years, inflation done its job. And like, $350 of 10 years ago, they're not the $350 of today. And we should be able to charge more, but it's impossible, because the industry is built on that.
Absolutely. But you, as you say, you can't, you have to keep those standards, because if you start slipping and accepting less money for equal tasks, it isn't fair to your clients, but it's not fair to you.
No. The problem is, like, if I charge $350 in 10 years' time, I can't, I won't be able to afford to have a family.
No.
To pay my bills.
Yeah, you know? For sure.
Like, I find it unfair that some clients kind of squeeze you a little bit. And I understand the budgets are limited and stuff like that. But whenever a commercial client comes in and they're doing well, like, you know, I don't want to be arguing for £500.
No.
You either want to do it or not.
Yeah.
I'm trying to like make sure I charge the right amount, just because I have responsibilities now, right?
Totally.
Like, you have a family too, Thomas. Like,
yeah.
So you need to make sure that your work is fairly valued.
Mm.
And I'm not saying, I think you're very fair with your prices. In fact, do you remember when I met you at the Glug talk you were talking about?
Mm-hmm.
And I've asked you, how much does it cost to do the top of my window? And
you're
like, oh, $200. And I was like, what?
Yeah.
That's cheap for the amount of craftsmanship.
But there's a difference between commercial and residential
money, right? Totally,
100%. And there's also like this, you know, there's fewer people who would be happy to spend, you know, £350 for me for a day to gild a name on there.
Yeah,
front door. Some people would be happy with that.
Absolutely.
You know, most I've met probably out of their budget. So I would argue that, you know, pricing, I have a price scale, but it's, you know, the entry level one at least really is, you know, for that sort of gold leaf mirror gilding number above someone's front door, it's £200. But, you know, it's a really good, that those house numbers are really good. It's really good sand for me, right?
Yeah.
So I need those to keep ticking on.
Yeah.
And do one a week. I can do 2 a week.
Yeah.
I can do four. If I had four on the same street, I could do four in the same day.
Man, when you said the price, I was like, oh, I can actually, I could afford that. Because I thought it would be more expensive. Yeah. I think you're very fair with your price.
So, I mean, and actually what my theory is, although I'm yet to put this into practice, is I'm booking them farther in advance.
Yeah.
So that, you know, you live in Ormiston. If I got two in North Berwick, I could say, okay, in 2 months' time, I'm in North Berwick on Friday.
I can do Eric and Ormiston, one in Aberlady, totally. And two in Norberg. Done.
Exactly. And I can do, you know, ideally I can do, you know, I can do that in the future. So, and that's what I'm building towards.
Yeah.
And then eventually what I'll start to do is I'll just do those on Fridays. And that will be, you know, perhaps I'll just do one on a Friday and that'll be my half day that I do, you know, and I'll do a half day on a Friday, then I'll go home.
No, man, it makes perfect sense. I love the way you're doing it. It's so fair, it's so clean, and it makes perfect sense.
Well, I had like these, with the house numbers, it's a funny one. I had like the idea of doing flyers, but it's trying to cut down on conversation. So I think people will be able to relate if they do work for residential clients and commercial clients, you know, commission-based work. Say illustration, for example, is quite a common one. Yeah. You know, you can have as many conversations with a big client, you know, about a, you know, £4,000 job.
Yeah.
Then you can with someone for a, you know, a £120 commission for their child's bedroom.
Yeah.
You know, whatever. You can have there's this weird thing that it's just like, you know, and you can charge comms when you have big projects. You can say, I'm gonna add 4 hours to the estimate there for comms, and that's deemed fair for a big project.
Yeah.
You know, for residential stuff, it's like imagine going back to a client when you'd be like, oh, I painted that your son's name on an old bit of wood. But, you know, there's been 30 emails, you know. You know, and it's really tricky. Mm. So with the gold leaf stuff, I was like, I definitely want to do these, but I don't, you know. And it's a really, people really love it. And it's really nice, often a finishing touch to their home. But so I want to try and cut down on the conversations I'm having with them. So it's like, I did the flyer. The flyer's got information, not a lot, but it mainly is the pricing guide.
Yeah.
So like straight away, it's like, if people can't afford it, absolutely, no problem. Then, you know, they can see that straight away.
Yeah. No, I love the idea. Actually, because when you're saying that you have a day, Fridays will be like, that's when I'm doing doors.
Mm.
And that makes sense. Because then you can say to people, look, Friday's the day I'm doing this.
Mm-hmm.
There is a queue of 20 people, so I can come to you in 3 months.
Totally.
And that's all there is to it.
And residential people wait that long, no problem.
Yeah, exactly. Actually, if you make it work in your own terms,
totally,
then you don't need to charge more because it's like it works in your own terms.
Absolutely. And, you know, and if you do two in a day, £400 day, that's over my
absolutely.
Day, so we're all good.
Like where I'm coming from is the clients that call you and they say, oh, I want this done by Friday. And you're like, cool, it's going to cost you X.
Yeah.
Too expensive. Totally. Well, then you're not going to get it done by Friday.
Mm,
do you know what I mean?
That's the way it should be.
That's the way it should be. And also, agency, if you work for an agency, you know, as you've been in, like, all those emails, all those calls, they're all accounted for.
Mm.
You ain't going to speak to account downstairs and ask them 35 questions without being charged for it.
Totally.
Whilst as a freelancer or as a self-employed person, you're expected to do all that for free. And you are right. The amount of time, quote-unquote, wasted on projects that got stuck in the pipeline, never got made, somebody else got the job, all that time amounts to a lot of money by the end of the year.
Totally.
And it's not about the money. It's about the time I haven't spent with my daughter, with my wife.
Yeah.
I haven't spent, like, you know, reading or doing all stuff I like.
You know, I think that going back to the sort of tradesman world, that's an interesting point because that must be so frustrating. I've done a few jobs where I've gone and I've quoted and I've given estimates and I've measured and I've spoken and it hasn't come off.
Do you know what I mean?
You know, and I'm like,
that's a morning.
It's taken me like 4 hours.
Store.
I could have been, you know, I was like, I could have been making money doing that, you know, or I could have been, you know, you've mentioned it. We took on a house that is still far from complete 2 years later, 2.5 years later. There's loads of stuff to do. I mean, like we have a kitchen without cupboard doors, for example. So I've got
that would kill me.
I built
Thomas.
The carcass. So I made so. But the thing is, my wife's very patient with me. But she'll say things like, "Well, you decided to build the kitchen." like
that little nag.
Yeah.
The little like. So you were saying, right?
That you we were yeah. Do you this. Decided to make the kitchen, and I really enjoyed making the kitchen cabinets. You know, and they're, I mean, like I learned a few things making them. So it's like I enjoyed that.
Mm-mm. What about the kitchen doors?
Yeah, I mean, I but there's 41 doors to make in my house. So not in the kitchen. I don't have a big kitchen, but I did the wardrobe carcasses too. So we've got the wardrobes and all the wardrobe doors. And then there's two cabinets in the kitchen. Yeah, sorry, in the living room. So yeah, the total number of doors is 41 doors.
Do you know who has a lot of doors? And they're cheap. And right. They look actually quite right.
Yeah, don't say B&Q.
No, it's IKEA. Have you ever heard of IKEA? It's a Swedish brand. They're doing really well.
Yeah.
So tell me about this. Like, why did you decide to make all the carcasses and not the doors?
I suppose that's the order that you would make it anyway. So you would, if you were making a kitchen, a handmade kitchen, you would make all the carcasses first.
So you ran out of steam then, is all you're saying?
Oh, we ran out of time. Well, actually, I have, you know, I think that I've got good friends who have this part in their nature, which is they get home, they do the kids' tea and bed. They do their own tea. They wash up. The kitchen's immaculate.
Yeah, yeah.
They might sit down, watch telly, half an hour, maybe an episode or something on Netflix, and go to bed. Whereas I'm like, at the end of every evening and when I leave in the morning, there's probably still washing up there to do. I just feel like it's part of us is like we just quite enjoy sort of like at the end of the day, we're sitting down and watching telly and watching a couple of hours of just like vegetable, being a vegetable, right?
Just
switching off. So it's not conducive to like having a house that's half finished, because if I was the other person, I'd be like, right, see, tonight, once we've done the kids' bed, Ivy's bed, and we've done our tea, and we've washed up, I'll fix that thing. Or I'll put a coat of paint on the ceiling. I just don't do that.
Yeah, fair enough.
What I do is I wait until I have a weekend where my wife and daughter are away or whatever.
Right. So you're looking at maybe doing a couple of doors in 2021?
I think that 2020 is the year for doors.
Not all of them.
Yeah.
Let's not go crazy.
I'm going to do some of them.
Some of them.
Yeah. And then there's the thing about, why don't you pay someone else to do that?
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, to do that, I would have to make the money to do that. And I don't have that money.
You know how you solve that? You charge a little bit more. Yeah, okay. So you got more money.
Well, I think we got there eventually, but I think we agree. I think I price things fairly, but.
No, you did. You're just taking the piss. Do you know, like, we were like your friends. We wanted everything done, but we paid for it.
Yeah.
So we said, you know, we saved this money. We made some money selling our flat. Let's invest that into doing up this place.
Yeah.
And instead of having to be in perpetual undone house, let's get it done.
Yeah.
And so we did.
It's great.
That's price for it.
That's great. Yeah, absolutely.
Because like, if you want speed corner.
And
we had to cut corners.
Sure.
So kitchen is IKEA or IKEA. IKEA. And it looks good.
Yeah.
We like it. And we know that at any point we can just buy new doors we can afford it. It looks good.
Yeah.
But instead of having no doors,
yeah,
we invested £200 on having doors that look good. And we can change them anytime.
Yeah. That is great.
That's amazing.
I just like,
I love how so different. Great. You're so similar, but yet so different.
Yeah.
I love this.
Well, you know what's funny is that I get in trouble, quite rightly, by family, mainly my mum, actually, who says stuff like, you know, you shouldn't be helping other people do stuff. You should be doing it on your own house. I think that's quite fair, isn't it?
That's a great business advice.
Yeah. So I would be quite happy. But I would, you know, like, say, for example, you're like, oh, can you, I need to put, there's a bit of skirting board missing in my hallway and I don't know how to do it. I'd be like, oh, I'll help you. I'll do that. Because I would know how to do that.
Wow.
And I would just help you.
You're a nightmare. But then I
wouldn't say to you, no, because that time I should be using it my own.
What if I say, I come to you, we do a couple of cupboard doors together, and then you come and fix my skirting board.
Yeah, fine.
That's what a good friend would do.
Yeah, sure. I mean,
are your good friends?
Hey, I've got plenty of doors.
Yeah.
All my good friends have got kids, so they're busy, right?
Oh, God. That's it. That's it. That's the end of it. It's like, that is one of the key things. And when people say, oh, we got kids, they say, all right.
Yeah.
I'm glad we've done everything before.
Well, you realize, I think that's the key. We didn't. And it's, you know, I take responsibility for it. It's my fault. But we're happy in our home, but. I'm happy in the home because I'm not there. I go to work every day.
Yeah, you're not there all day.
I'm not there all day.
You should do it for your wife.
Yeah, totally. She's She's a saint, the patron of a saint.
She is, I bet she is.
Yeah, for sure.
And I should have done the podcast with both of you.
Totally. Yeah. And like, see, we have, I put, a, I, it was things like, what I do is I'll like fit the front. I bought a front door and I prepped it and painted it and I fitted it and I removed the old door and I put in a new door surround and I painted that and I fitted the new router, the new letterbox and stuff. But that I did that all in one weekend when I was meant to be doing the back door, not the front door.
So you're one of those people that you have to have something you absolutely have to do. So
do you know
you
what?
Do something else.
I just saw 2 days and I thought I would enjoy those 2 days more if I was doing the front door. Then the back door's just a cheap UPVC door and it would, you know, the thing, it would be a bit of stonemasonry to get it wider. But anyway, so
your wife.
I just saw myself and I was like, yeah, sometimes. So the door looked great. And then winter comes along and you realize it's not so great because it's an old door, but you know, and
so it's a wee bit cold.
It's a bit cold, yeah. But last night, I'm getting there. Fixed that.
Did you?
Yeah.
Well done. Yeah. What did you put? You put some insulation then? Things
yeah,
at the
yeah.
Bottom of the
well,
top
and... yes. And there's still a few problems, but hey,
we'll fix that 2021.
Yeah.
After the doors
it's plenty of time. We want to focus on Christmas. So,
Are you going to stay there long term then?
Well, I think until the house, until we grow. Do we grow too big for it, I guess. But... But it's a financial thing as well. Like moving house will cost you 10 grand. So
that's so true. That's the stuff that people don't tell you.
Yeah.
But when you buy and sell, it's at least there's cost and property managers, agency cost about 10 grand.
Yeah.
10K.
Yeah. And if you're talking about property over 200,000 and, you know, 300,000, you know, and like our house was 200,000 and it was out in Longniddry. And for that, you wouldn't get a one-bedroom flat in Dalry.
How many bedrooms?
We've got two. We've got a garden that's as big as the footprint of the house. So we've got massive room to extend. Mm. And I didn't have a workshop. So I used the garage as my workshop. But the problem with that is that I was working on one thing. So it was like one thing. It was actually good for my, because I'm not necessarily focused. Can be that focused. Right. So it was good because I was doing one thing and I was delivering that project and then the next thing was coming. But then the problem there, of course, as well, is that I'm not maximizing my time because I'm only focusing on one thing because I've only got space to do one thing, perhaps.
Yeah.
And my easel was only so big and I needed other things in there as, you know, whatever. So so I took on a workshop and since then I've had lots of space. So it's 75 square meter workshop.
The one you're renting,
yeah. So well, I rent it from the council
workshop.
Yeah, it's great. I went to a Business Gateway meeting for some advice, and they said, you know, and in the future when you grow and your business is bigger, you might want to look into a premises. And coincidentally, there's one in Longniddry available.
Now that's lucky.
And now I they showed me the spec, and I was like, oh well, I'll go and have a look. And it was been empty for 2 years. So they've been struggling to find someone to find it.
Because it's a long injury.
Yeah, totally. So I took it on. I offered half of what it was listed as for the annual rent.
Wow.
And the council came back and said, we can't do it that cheaply, but we can offer it to you. The lowest we can offer it to you based on other properties is this. So now I rent out a 75 square meter workshop. And I found out recently, there's a historian who like tends a garden on the main street of my village.
Mm-hmm.
I went to talk to him about it and he told me all about the history of the building.
I love that.
It's great. So it was, they built my workshop as a community space and village hall in 1916.
Wow.
And then they built six homes, two up, two down homes for Homes for Heroes, First World War returning veterans, Scottish veterans. And then they built a village shop and a piggery, and they had a community hall, my workshop, and that had a big green behind it. And I've got a photograph of it being used for a meeting, and you can definitely recognize it.
That's awesome.
And now I use it. And I rent the office out to another local business.
Do you?
Yeah. So
what's the other local business?
So she's called, the business is called Mel, and she runs a business called Spice Pots and out of Gullen.
Cool.
And it's interesting because when I first had that, I wanted to it could be a really nice like creative studios.
Yeah.
And then I realized quickly, I was just like, that is going to be harder for me to manage. So I'm going to have four people renting a desk each.
Yeah.
I'm going to have four people to manage four sets of keys, four cars, etc. It goes on.
You become a property man. You become a landlord.
Totally. And whereas my landlord duties now pretty much are minimal, like tidy up, you know, every now and again, take the bins to the tip. And Mel has the office. It's self-contained. And also you're
barely in because you're always doing the rounds and painting around.
Well, we get like days. I mean, like in the winter at the moment, it's difficult because it's when it's raining, we're our schedule's constantly reshuffling. So, you know, if you compare my work to yours, you're always indoors on a computer.
99%, yeah. Yeah. Besides meetings.
Totally. So I'm often outdoors. I can go a week where I do 5 days outside. And I can go a week where I do 5 days inside. Some days are those days inside my workshop, and some are inside other businesses or premises.
Got you.
The difficulty I'm finding this year, more than now that I'm busier, is juggling. So I have to move stuff around. So what I need to be doing more is telling a client when I accept a job that I a date range in which it'll be completed by. Closer to what tradesmen do, right? Other trades.
Yeah.
For that very reason, is that I have to react to weather. Yesterday was really cold. It was really sunny. So I was outside, and it's a job that's been lingering for a month because I've not been able to find the time because I've not managed it well.
Of course,
I've not managed my time well for this last month.
Why?
What happened? Well, I had flu. That was the main reason, and I tried to work through it.
And you know, a man having the flu.
Yeah, I hate that bullshit though. It's not man flu. I had fucking flu. I was in my bed.
Yeah.
I was running to and from the toilet. I'll be honest. I was ill.
Oh, was that one of those coming problems?
I was sick. I was like, I was properly ill. So
spray tanning the toilet.
So I worked. I had a day in bed, and I went and painted a shop fascia, and then I had a day in bed.
And then painting the toilet.
And then, honestly, it was hard. It was bullshit that I forced myself into doing that. And I need to get better.
It's entirely based on the amount of work you have. And if you have a project and you're ill, it's not you can call your client and say, hey, do you know that ad that's going live in a week? Can we postpone that for a week?
Yeah.
Because I can't do that.
No.
Did you buy TV space? Can you move that for a bit, please? Yeah. Thank you. Cheers. Bye.
You know, can you delay your shop opening?
Yeah. Can you? Yeah, exactly. So certain things that it's just flu or not, you're going to have to do it. So it's like, that's just the life of a self-employed person, I guess. But you shouldn't be the case. You should be able to say, I need to take a day off.
Well, I think that I learned a lesson there. But I mean, I was in a position where I had someone coming up visiting from Bristol to paint with us. So I had to go.
So tell me something, right? You know, when you went, you started doing your painting officially in like 2016, right? That's when you went full time and you started Thomas Paints as a trade, I guess.
Yeah.
But that's also when you became a dad, isn't it?
Pretty much. So, I was trying to remember this recently when I did that Glug talk, when exactly I went. I will know if I looked, but when exactly I went freelance. I'm pretty sure it was a month after.
You got a baby.
Yeah.
So, why?
Maybe it was longer. I can't remember.
Of all times.
Yeah, totally. Do you know what, though? I think you'll know, like, babies require constant care and milk, and they don't eat solid food until they're 6 months. Relatively inexpensive things to keep.
It's not about the money. It's more about the pressure.
I think to be honest, that was the only thing. The money thing was the only thing on my mind.
Was it?
Because I was like, I had a job with Storage Scotland, which I mentioned.
Yeah.
And that was going to pay. My friend David said to me, if you could pay for 3 months of all your outgoings, if you've got enough money for 3 months, then you can go freelance.
That's what I tell everybody.
So you're in your job. Totally. 3 months. You need 3 months. So I just said, I had 3 months because I had this job at Historic Scotland.
Perfect.
And I was like, now it's time to do it.
It's that case, because what I notice is since I had a baby, I made some questionable choices in terms of like their long-term choices.
Yeah.
So right now they're painful, but they're not going to be painful long-term. Hopefully, otherwise they're going to be painful throughout. But it came to me that it kind of like get your ass in gear.
Yeah.
So you know the stuff you'd be like, oh, I'd like to do that, but I don't have time, or I'm busy or whatever, I need the money. And the moment you have the baby, it's like game time. It's going to be a go-go now.
Totally. I actually know what I'm thinking now as we're talking, that I think Ivy was a year when I went full-time. Right. And it was for that first year, I was part-time. And then I was a part-time painter and a part-time head of design.
Head of design at an SEO agency. Yeah.
So that was when, and that's in that year, it started to snowball that my work picked up. And that's when I got that contract with Historic Scotland. And then I decided to go for it. But we were still living in a house that...
Half done.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, like, we haven't progressed much further. But it's like, you know, I don't want to keep talking about the house. But I suppose it's one of those things. It's like...
It's like a big thing in your life right now. And clearly you want to get it done.
Yeah.
But you can't find the motivation.
Do you know what, though, as well? It's like, it's working on the house is pretty similar to my job.
Mm-hmm.
It's like
schedule it in.
Yeah, I should. But then I
give a day range to your wife and say, okay,
totally.
So here's the range. Yeah,
this month, 20th, 21st, 22nd, 23rd of December, four days straight. I'm doing it on the house.
But you know, if you could say, I'm gonna do, maybe dates is a bit problematic, but if you can say, so you know, you need 40 doors, right?
Yeah,
or give or take. Then say, I'm gonna do 3 doors a month.
Yeah.
That's you done in a year. You have all doors. And then you can, there's other jobs you need to do in the house, right?
Yeah.
So you got your doors sorted because you know you're going to do 3 a month. And then you just say, okay, I need to fix the skirting boards. Totally. So I'm going to do a skirting board this month and a skirting board next month.
Yeah.
Easy, man. You got it done.
That is so, that's really sensible.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then, but then you have to do it.
Yeah, totally.
You have to wake up on Sunday morning.
Yeah.
Get Ivy to the studio.
Yeah, totally. Do you know what as well? That plays into it. Because it's a time that I'm not working on the house. My time with at home, like being a dad, is I don't spend enough time at home. And that's totally honest. Mm-hmm. Like, because I feel this pressure of completing, getting all my work done for the week.
Yeah.
And delivering projects and sending artwork across in preparation for the following week.
Right, right, right.
Doing all my admin and invoicing at the end of the week and like getting stuff out of my head.
Yeah.
But also maximizing the amount of income that I can make so that we're not worried about cash flow.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And you won't have time.
All of that stuff, whether it's, you know, normally it's like between the last 2 hours of the day, it's like between 4 and 6. And even getting home at 6 is too late, like for having a 2-year-old. So it's tough.
It is tough.
Because it's like I get home, tea time's gone, been and gone.
Mm-hmm.
Bath time.
Do you do bath time?
If she has a bath, yes. Doesn't always have a bath. Sometimes just goes to bed earlier. So really I have an hour.
That's crushing.
An hour?
You just have an hour to high-five your daughter and that's it.
Yeah.
Sorry, dude.
Well, it is this balance that I haven't struck. But tell me, this is like, maybe it's like a chip on my shoulder about some other painters, sign writers in the Instagram world, that whereas the job is a bit more of a lifestyle choice. It's not necessarily pricing up jobs that can provide income and that can pay the mortgage.
Yeah.
And I'm sure those people have responsibilities.
100%,
I'm not discounting that. But I only know one other painter from the Instagram world who has a young family and is doing up a house and is self-employed and is the only breadwinner. So it's like,
you just give me a panic attack just to hearing that.
Yeah.
Fucking hell.
So I've got all of that. So it's really difficult because you've got all of that.
Yeah.
And then you're like, I need to go home. So you've got, there's all stuff to do, but you need to go home and spend time. But then, so I find it's just like, Monday to Friday, 9 till 5 or 6, 9 till 6, and the weekends, family stuff. You got to do stuff.
Yeah, you're doing stuff. You're working on a weekend.
I work every now and again, but I don't choose to.
Do you know? that's what I was talking about, painful decisions. I'm taking less projects on board. And so I've been unlucky because I started doing that and then a couple of projects failed like the day before, which put me in a very sticky situation money-wise because I was like, oh, fuck. You know, I bet on this project and this project didn't come through the day before. That's rare that happens the day before. It happens, but very rare. So it put me in a very sticky situation. But for me, it's been like, make sure I price my work correctly. Mm-hmm. Make sure I amount the time I work on something and I get paid for it. Mm-hmm. So I used to be more like malleable.
Easier said than done.
Yeah, easier said than done. So I used to be more malleable. Say, okay, I got this budget. And then like, for me, it's all about, I give it all. Every project I do, I give it all. So if it takes me like 20 hours more than what I've charged, I won't charge for these 20 hours because I've agreed for a budget, there's a quote and everything else, you know? So that's bad for business. You don't run a business like that because otherwise you go out of business.
Yeah.
So I had to stop doing that.
Yeah.
And that means I had to say no to projects that kind of headed in that direction, right? So that was painful. But that means that then eventually over time you get projects that pay better, that pay the right amount of money. So... that's been a painful choice, but it was necessary because I didn't want to spend another year working all the time. Because what happened last year was it was the best year for me as a freelancer ever last year. Mm-hmm. But I worked every day.
Yeah.
I rarely
Saturday, Sunday.
Work. Saturday, Sunday, but rarely didn't work. Sometimes I'll be at Wednesday.
You didn't
off.
Have your daughter, wasn't
born. No, I was, we were still
pregnant.
Yeah. We were finished the house. We were pregnant.
Yeah.
And I like soon realized that is not the right way of doing it.
No, for sure.
I'd rather have less money and take a gamble on money and time because I'd rather spend that time with my family than I do working on something I don't care.
Yeah.
The problem is I'm working on my own stuff that I'm trying to put together. Mm-hmm. So the long term, it will help money-wise. And that's taking a lot of time. So I've ended up being in the same exact position as I was before. And it's crushing me. That's why I work from home. I work from home because I can spend 20 minutes
in my daughter. You're not paying rent in the studio.
Half an hour. Yeah, not paying rent in the studio. And I'm always there. If I want to go down and give her a kiss, I'll do that. If I want to go play with her for 10, 15 minutes, I'll do that.
Yeah.
My wife, who needs to take a breather, I look after her for an hour.
Totally.
And that's...
That's a fantastic place to be.
Yeah.
I wish that my chosen profession...
could do that.
Yeah.
It's crushing my mind. It really is because... I don't know how I couldn't do it.
Yeah.
I love my daughter. Not that you don't, but like, you know, I just...
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it's like...
It's hard.
It's a constant juggling act.
It is.
With young family and self-employment.
It is.
I just have this... you feel a sense of responsibility that you've got to go to work.
Yeah.
And you know, and it's extremely difficult. But the thing is that... There is perhaps it's a misconception that I am lucky actually because I have a job where I can go around and do what I need to do and, you know, I drive my van. I really enjoy driving my van around and I can just, you know, if I want to go and get a Bross bagel, I can go and get one, right?
Yeah. Well, I guess Mama Bross will give you a free bagel when you walk in,
she gives me lots of free bagels,
Because you've done all the...
We've done loads of stuff, We've just done a big train mural, which is totally...
Love Mama Bross. She's been on the podcast too. I don't know if she's...
She is mad.
She's great.
Totally.
Love her stuff.
And it's like, I can do that. So I guess like from the outside perspective, it looks like I have a great life. Because actually, I go from independent business often to another one, and I do lots of cool work, right?
You've done like some of the most iconic signage we have in Edinburgh.
I think maybe if you're in a certain circle, perhaps you would think that.
Well, come on, man.
But I think that from a sign writer's point of view, from like me and Tatch, for example, we perhaps see it differently because there is like, we're happy with work we've done. Mm-hmm. We've done lots. We also can see work that's been there for a long time, which, like, in terms of sign writing,
you can do much better.
Yeah. It's so, so good.
I know. You also done the Elephant House, which is seen by millions
of
people.
Oh, yeah. That's a little small job, but it's probably the one of the most photographed things.
Jesus, that is like one of the places people come to see where she wrote the book. And it's not even a coffee shop anymore. It's like, it was a restaurant.
Yeah, totally. So I think that it's interesting because I go to all these places and have, you know, they offer you free coffee and free pastries and lunch and everything. Yeah. It's great. But it's still work, right?
Yeah.
And there are days, like yesterday, where I got on site at 9:30 and I painted by myself until 5 p.m. And yes, that's a normal day, but I didn't take a break. I just painted.
Just painted.
I ate at the bottom of the ladder, half a sandwich, and climbed back up again. And I had two coffees, and by the time I finished them both, they were cold. And I went and bought those coffees. The client didn't offer me a cup of tea. Right?
Wow.
So like, the client was inside.
You're speaking exactly like a tradesman.
Yeah, yeah. But that is quite... But then it's a long day. So it's a long day, right?
Yeah, yeah.
I'm painting 8 hours by myself in 3 degrees, 4 degrees. It was cold. You're in your head a lot. I'm thinking about stuff. That's days like that, you think that is work. And yeah, I got some nice photos for my Instagram. But there are still plenty of jobs where it's like an absolute, it's a slog and it's really hard. So like there is this lifestyle that it probably looks like I have, which is not true. I go from independent business around
to social media.
Yeah, right. It's not fucking true.
Well, you know, you're doing social media right, air quotes, because you're doing everything you should be doing. You know what you could be doing? More carousels, because at the moment they're
okay.
Great.
I'm just literally, as before we came to this, I just about to do
7-10 pictures, carousels. Like even if it's all stuff, put it together, show your processes, because carousels, they're attracting a bigger number of people these days. That's why a lot more bigger Instagrams starting in more carousels.
Yeah.
So do carousels. I don't know if IGTV is still counting against your, it's still improving your numbers. Be worth maybe having a look at that.
I use Instagram for work.
That's what I mean.
And I am. There is an addiction there. There's no doubt about it.
How many hours do you spend on Instagram?
I couldn't tell you. It's too many.
But you got your phone.
Yeah. Can you tell me by looking at my phone?
Yeah. You go on screen time.
Right. Okay. It's gonna be scary.
So you just search for screen.
Oh yeah. Okay. I haven't screen set it up. Time. This is my phone. Yeah, so I've not set it up.
You have not set it up.
So now I have.
Now you have.
I'll tell you.
I can tell you that today I spent 18 minutes on Instagram and I have a daily average of 9 minutes and 15 notifications.
I think that mine would be much more than that.
And I say this all the time, I used to be a big addict. I used to be huge on Instagram, meaning I spent my days on Instagram.
I know that, yeah.
But like, man, I was on Instagram 5 hours a day or something. Yeah. It was a job.
I think that I'm probably up there. I've said this to a lot of people who do similar stuff to me, who are quite precious about what they post. I don't see it that way. I like to create a nice feed that looks nice.
Mm. Oh, you do.
I definitely do.
You do.
Yeah, I do and I enjoy it.
And it looks good.
Yeah, but I post everything I do. Like, I don't post every toilet sign I paint because I've painted loads.
Wait, but you could have a carousel of
all the toilet signs.
That would be hilarious, man.
Yeah, yeah. I've got that.
Yeah.
I should do that.
Do it.
I've got loads of photos of toilet signs.
You can have like a little designy thing that says, you know, this is all my toilet work, and then just go in.
Great content. That's what I always joke. It's not a very funny joke, but whenever I'm sort of taking a photograph of something, I'm always just like,
Yeah. But you know what? Like at the end of the day, what you want to do is you want to share your good stuff, and you have loads of good stuff, but you want to make it as engaging as possible,
totally,
right?
Yeah.
So like your stuff is engaging because it looks good.
Yeah.
Motherfucker, looks
good.
Well,
thanks very much.
You're very good. But like if you can have an extra fun with it, people would love it.
Can I address the point of that? I feel like...
Well,
just because something's painted doesn't mean it's good.
No, but
design.
It looks good. Yeah.
So there's like, there's an Instagram world, which is like people who are excellent technicians who brush things beautifully.
Right.
And the finish is immaculate.
Yeah.
And the people who are good designers but aren't very good painters.
Mm.
And there's a balance. And I hope that I'm in the middle of that.
Yeah.
And I do a balance of both, that I am, from experience, a good designer.
Yeah.
And through practice, a good painter. And I combine them both. So I hope that my work shows that. But I look at others and it's so beautifully painted. But I don't like it. It's not nice. I wouldn't have it on my wall.
It's like, that's the thing. Shop. It's like, it's the handmade thing that you go for it and that you go for. And your stuff is very well defined, right? It is not immaculate. It's not perfect by design.
Yeah.
And that's what make it look better, in my opinion.
So say, for example, there's a logo of whomever, mm-hmm. a finance firm, a cafe, a shop, whatever, a restaurant. You might not like the logo, but if I gilded it on the front
it would
of
look
the window,
excellent.
It would look great. Yeah. You would like it.
Yeah.
So I've got this thing that I just constantly remind myself, just because the finish, the execution is going to be good, doesn't mean it make it good. I mean, and often we get it a lot. Logos are designed small. They're designed for business cards, letterheads, often digitally. They're designed for the top of websites.
You
paint it 3 meters across, you see all the problems.
Yeah, I bet you do.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's amazing. Like, look, there's also this aspect that, like, you are Thomas Paynes. You know, you're a very well-known character in Edinburgh. Certainly in Scotland. Do you work outside of Edinburgh?
I think that probably it's all contained to Edinburgh. I mean, apart from the painting community of Scotland that I know. We had a sign writers meetup last week, Christmas drinks, and we were on the train home.
That's amazing.
Yeah, it was really good. But there was only about eight of us. Mm. And then you've got people like Rachel Miller, Attach.
Right.
You've got Kieran Globel, who wasn't there. But he's part of the group, and mm-hmm. then like Frank Carty and other very, very good painters. Yeah. Scott Telfer does a lot of churches. Younger people who have been painting for a couple of years.
Yeah,
people who have been painting for 40 years. So it's really interesting. It's amazing. Anyway, we were on the train back, and it was the last train back from Glasgow, and there was guys playing with this very nice looking bike, and the owner of the bike, was sitting next to us. And we were sort of talking to him about it. And I was like, when are you going to step in and stop them playing with your bike? And he's like, any moment now. and then they stopped. And he just said, what are you guys up to? And we were like, oh, we've just been to a sign writer's Christmas thing. And the guy said to me, he was like, oh, do you know Thomas Paynes?
What, you mean me?
And I was like, man, that's me, man. And I was like, of course, my ego sort of went like,
it went like
big head. Yeah. And my wife's like, oh, that's the worst thing someone could say to you. But it's really nice. And he was just like, I just know you because you've just done some work for someone I know.
That's the thing, like, because you've done a lot of work around. And like, I know you because I was in the Something Something studio when, you know, you've done the original Something Something signage. That's what
I did. So Robin Ambi did their first office.
Oh, right. Did you not do
and
the...
I did the mural outside their new office.
Oh, fuck. I thought you did the first one too.
Robin passed away. Robin passed away recently.
So,
what? Yeah, so Robin passed away. He was 71.
Oh, Jesus.
So his work, actually, interestingly, going back to Edinburgh sign writing, you look and there's so many beautiful examples of his work. Right. So there's one that's just closed on Easter Road, the Manor House Bakery.
Oh.
Yeah, that's closed last week.
That's a shame.
So weird. It's not.
I can't believe that closed down.
Yeah,
that did the bread for my wedding in 2016.
Totally. Yeah. I think they were really popular. It's a real shame that they closed.
That's a real shame.
Yeah, and a beautiful painted shot from
that
Robin did. Yeah.
Oh, that's really hard.
So every time we sort of see one now, attaches. My friend, sign writer, is cataloguing Robin's work. He's taking photographs of it. Before it gets painted over.
Yeah.
Yeah, because that's what's going to happen.
Off the 100.
Because, I mean, like, we've done stuff recently. I just was something last week, which was a paint over of his. And like, if it's not photographed and cataloged, then it'll be lost.
It's gone forever.
Yeah, totally.
That's interesting.
So that's what we see when we drive around. We see his work, some of the beautiful things that have been painted by him.
So I'm 100% sure you did the first one too. I don't know why then. I must have come across you, someone else. But you've been on and off my Instagram feed doing stuff for people I know. So it was like, that's how I came across you.
Mm.
But also, we sort of crossed streams in the industry here and there. Mm-hmm. You know, we didn't really work together. But we kind of like, because...
We were in the same office at one point.
Yeah. Yeah. It's crazy. It's like,
well, you were only there for on a freelance capacity.
Yeah, but you know, it's just the way Edinburgh is.
Yeah, totally.
So it was interesting to see how basically doing your own thing with a bit of attention. You know, you're doing Instagram the way you want to be doing Instagram, and you're clearly like following the blueprint a little bit because what you're doing.
Yeah,
it's you know, bang on and it's working for you.
Yeah.
And if for anybody out there that wants to become a sign writer,
yeah,
sign painter, probably should look at what you're doing and try and see if they can replicate it.
That's a nice compliment, yeah.
Yeah. But no, that's the way it is. But like, also like the personality come through with your writing and what you're showing, the way you're showing your pictures, you know, it's the whole package. It's the one thing is, saying, I'm going to get my shop front signed, painted. And one thing it says, Thomas Paint is going to do my shop front.
Yeah.
You know?
I'm lucky that has been the case. That's happened.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
That's what you want.
I know. Right? I mean...
you're doing great.
And you know what's really interesting is that when I did that Glug talk and I was like pulling out photographs, I was like, I'm not going to focus on like the result, which I was pleased with for every example.
Yeah.
But rather than that, focus on the thing I did on that job, not quite right, or the one that I learned on. So it's like, oh, this is a photograph of the Sweet Dram sign. It's the first time I painted on Tunnel Groove, up a 4 meter ladder. And this is an example of the first Gilders sign I did. Yes, it looks really nice in the photograph, but was it a good Gild? No, it was not. And I am much better at that now. Yeah. You know, and you go on like that, you know, and I can look back at every single thing in my Instagram feed, which is essentially just my portfolio of work.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's all it is. And I can tell you the thing on the job that was either not quite right, that was out of my control, or the thing that I didn't do right and I learned for the next time.
Do you know what? Like, we need to go. We've been already over. But before we do, I want to ask you something. I'm trying to put together a few comments from people. I'm just starting with you. And I want to call it like, what do I need to do to, in this case, become a sign writer, sign painter.
Yeah.
So we heard your story, right? We discussed some of the details. Clearly, it's been a bit erratic in a way because I usually follow like a timeline. This time we kind of started and I just felt the conversation flew so well. But I want to ask you, if you were to say to me, I come to you and I say, I want to become a sign painter, sign writer. What do I need to do to become one? In bullet points.
Totally. So... I haven't prepared an answer, so I may waver. But I would say,
in order, first thing you do,
go on a course. Mm-hmm. There are some really good ones.
What type of course?
Signwriting course. Go on a signwriting course. Joby Carter, look up him. In London, NGS, you can look up him. I run them, so you can look up mine. Go on a course, learn the basics, and then set yourself a task. And so it's one task and think of the end result and try and get to the end result and plan how to get there. So for me, I got 40 panels cut by a friend of mine, a joiner, cut them all. Some good quality birch plywood. I had some nice panels there and I was like, right, so I'm going to take a board of time and I'm going to go through the processes that I didn't learn in the workshop. I learned through trial and error and through online searching and YouTube and everything. Mm-hmm. And then I'm just going to go through that process. So I was like, measure the board. And then my phone's going.
Uh-oh. That's a job.
Yeah, it might, maybe. I've got my automatic response is, sorry, I'm up a ladder.
Good.
Which is
good,
quite good.
Good.
Which makes me laugh. Yeah. So set yourself a task. So you want the end result, which is going to be a house name, a bedroom, whatever it's going to be. It's going to say, you know, it's going to say yes, it's going to say no, whatever it's going to say. And just set yourself a task and just go through that. So don't start with a blank canvas is the opposite to that.
Yeah, yeah.
So go on a course and learn the basics and then learn by doing, learning and earning, as I sort of refer to it. Every time I do a job, I earn and I learn something new. So
how do you know when it's time to continue the learning but also start the earning?
Well, people start to see what you can do and then ask you to do it for them.
Perfect.
And that's it.
So do, share. So you would say that the key things are learn how to do it and then do it loads and then show your work.
Exactly.
That's it. Perfect. Thomas Paine, thank you very much for being part of the podcast.
My pleasure.
I really appreciate it.
Quite a surreal experience, like talking to someone over the fence.
I know. Was that the first podcast you ever done?
Yeah, definitely.
Oh, cool.
I was the first talk about the Glug talk I did recently. First talk about my work. So,
wow. Yeah. You should do more talking.
Well, that's a compliment.
No, the talk was great. It was entertaining. It was fun. And it was just, it went like, done.
Yeah, it was quite quick.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think you can. Hey, I've got a load.
Like, if people want to talk to me about things, masking tape, emulsion, gloss, different types of paint. Please ask me questions. Masking tape questions, please. I will bore you. Let's do a whole podcast about it, please.
Do you know what? Two things you could do, right? One, it could be a call that you can call, like, let's see, a talk that you can call. I'm gonna make you a sign writer.
Yeah.
And then you just go through the motion. You talk about your story. You talk about what can you do and stuff like that. And then in a half an hour, people will be confident enough to go and start their own thing. Can you do that?
Yeah.
There you go. I think that's something you can really sell really well, man. And then the second one, to promote your work, right? You should definitely look into the newspaper people, the newspaper club, mm-hmm. and make like a newspaper of all your work. Mm-hmm. So you can do a page of all the, you know, the golden lettering you've done, page of all the shop fronts, and then you can send that to client, and it could help you like phase away some of the chit chatter.
Yeah.
Because if somebody gets in touch with you and they say, oh, you know what, I really like to know more or whatever, you can just send them a newspaper.
Yeah.
And it looks beautiful. So they will share it with their friends, they'll show it to some other people as well.
I think that's a good idea. I've had a few good ideas from today. Well, you've had a few good ideas.
That's my job.
And I'm going to take them.
Good. I'm glad they were good.
You know, sometimes you just need someone to tell you something.
Oh, same for me. Do you not think? But people say, oh, you know, you could do that. I'm like, fuck.
Well, that's mad.
Yeah, how did I? Of course.
I'm so excited to find all the toilet signs I've ever painted.
And I'm telling you, I can't wait to look at. You got me excited about that carousel because, God knows what you've been painting.
I've got
you know?
Loads.
And you're taking pictures all the time.
Oh, yeah, I take pictures of everything.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Please do. Yeah. Please put it together.
I'm going to tonight.
Yes. Well, Thomas, thank you very much. Tell people where they can find you.
Instagram, we've spoken about it. Yeah. Thomas_paints.
That's it.
Twitter,
that's
the same.
One. Yeah.
Facebook is very basic at the moment, but you can find me on Facebook and thomaspaints.com.
Mm-hmm. Also, for B2B, use LinkedIn a little bit more, man.
Yeah.
LinkedIn is the place for B2B right now. So if you want to do, you know, businesses and
stuff. Yeah, I think that, you know, I need more rocks next year. That's murals for offices for me, really. Yeah, so that would be a good thing to do.
I think it would be good to start, like, have a bit of a strategy.
I mean, and everyone's got a house, so they probably want a number somewhere, don't they?
Yes, almost absolutely. But like the mural is such a popular thing now.
Yeah,
and LinkedIn
totally.
Is the place where all startups, people hang out and peace. You know, you want to be in touch with these businesses.
Yeah.
So I'm pretty sure that the moment that you start dropping your work there, you're going to get your rocks, no bother.
Sounds good to me.
Try it, man.
Some more good advice. I'm going to act.
I've got plenty of those for free.
Well, you know what's really good about the podcast is that if I haven't taken any notes, so I can just listen back.
You
to
can
it.
Just listen. If you can't listen to your voice for 2 hours.
No, you're right. I won't be able to.
It's like I cringe every time I said it. I get used to it. I think I do like the sound of my voice a little bit too much. You know?
Well, it makes me shiver.
Right. Thomas, thank you very much, man.
You're welcome.
And thank you for listening. I'll speak to you again in 3 weeks. Bye.